leave some. Mm-hmm.
Well, hello, everybody. Good afternoon, and welcome to the public webinar for the Open Ocean Trustee Implementation Group Draft Restoration Plan 2 and Environmental Assessment for Fish, Sea Turtles, Marine Mammals, and Mesophotic and Deep Benthic Communities. Today, we have the Open Ocean Trustees, subject matter experts, and other staff participating in the webinar. My name is Lori Round, and I'm NOAA's representative for the Open Ocean Trustee Implementation Group. Our other speakers will introduce themselves during the webinar. Before we begin the webinar, Mindy Joyner with the firm Moffitt & Nichol will quickly run through some webinar logistics for you.
Hopefully everyone's logged into the webinar by now. You should be able to see the control panel on the right side of your screen. If you can't see the control panel, please click the orange arrow to show the control panel. If you're using a phone for audio, you should all be dialing in using the phone number provided by GoToWebinar. That's the number and access code listed under audio in the control panel. Please note that only presenters will be heard over the phone during the webinar. Attendees will be muted. Take a look at the questions box at the bottom of the control panel shown on this slide. If you have questions about the presentation along the way, please enter those into the questions box. After our presentation, we'll answer as many questions as we can in the time allotted. You'll also have an opportunity to submit comments on the draft restoration plan, but please hold these until the allotted public comment period, which will be announced after the question session. We'll also post the presentation to the gulfspillrestoration.noaa.gov website in a few days. Now back to Lori to go through our agenda for today.
Thank you, Mindy. So the purpose of this presentation is to provide information about the Open Ocean Trustee Implementation Group's Draft Restoration Plan 2 and Environmental Assessment. Today, we'll provide brief overviews of the Natural Resource Damage Assessment and Settlement with BP, the Trustees Programmatic Restoration Plan, and the Open Ocean Trustee Implementation Group. We'll also provide an overview of the Draft Restoration Plan 2 and the proposed restoration projects, reserving time for questions and formal comments using the webinar tools. Then we'll close with describing the next steps in our restoration planning process. The Deepwater Horizon oil spill was the largest offshore marine oil spill in U.S. history, spilling 12 times more oil by volume than the 1989 Exxon Valdez spill. Every day, beginning on April 20th, 2010, for 87 days, BP's Macondo well released an average of more than 1.5 million gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Oil slicks were observed across an area measuring over 43,000 square miles, an area roughly the same size as the state of Virginia. Oil spread from the deep ocean to the surface and nearshore environment, washing up onto more than 1,300 miles of Gulf shoreline. Assessing natural resource injuries from the oil spill required more than 20,000 trips to the field for the collection of over 100,000 environmental samples. All of this effort was conducted in accordance with the Oil Pollution Act, which establishes the role of federal and state natural resource trustees to respond to and assess injuries from oil spills. In the open waters of the Gulf of Mexico, the oil came into contact with deep sea corals, fish, birds, endangered sea turtles, dolphins, and other protected marine life. The spill also injured the less visible biological communities that live in the water column, such as plankton, larval fish, and invertebrates, such as squid and shrimp, among others, that play important ecological roles in the marine food web. The Oil Pollution Act makes the parties responsible for an oil spill liable for the costs of response, injury assessment, and restoration needed to compensate the public for damages to natural resources. Under the Oil Pollution Act, a council of federal and state trustees was established soon after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill to assess the natural resource injuries and develop and implement plans to restore the natural resources that were damaged. This process is referred to as a natural resource damage assessment. The Deepwater Horizon Trustees are the Federal, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Department of the Interior, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and U.S. Department of Agriculture, and each of the five Gulf states. As part of the natural resource damage assessment, the trustees developed the Programmatic Damage Assessment and Restoration Plan. The plan documents the natural resource injuries caused by the spill and concludes that the scale of the injury is so massive that an ecosystem approach to restoration is needed. The trustees' plan is called programmatic because rather than identifying individual projects, it identifies goals, restoration types, and restoration approaches that set the course for more detailed project-level planning to achieve ecosystem restoration. In addition, the plan provides a framework for how the trustees will implement restoration and work together to achieve our long-term goals. In 2016, the trustees reached a settlement of $8.8 billion to resolve BP's liability for natural resource injuries caused by the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. This amount includes the $1 billion committed for early restoration conducted by the trustees prior to the settlement. The settlement provided for annual payments over the course of 15 years, with the first payment made in 2017. Based on the kind and extent of injuries caused by the spill, the settlement was allocated among the trustees five broad restoration goals, as indicated in this slide. Up to $700 million was reserved to respond to currently unknown and changing conditions that may affect restoration. The trustees created an implementation group for each of the eight restoration areas established in the programmatic restoration plan, one for each of the five Gulf states, the open ocean, region-wide, and an implementation group for unknown and adaptive management that may be formed in the future. Each trustee implementation group, often referred to as a TIG, is responsible for engaging the public to develop restoration plans that allocate funding to specific projects. Trustee implementation groups also implement restoration and track and report progress towards our restoration goals. The Open Ocean Trustee Implementation Group is responsible for planning and implementing restoration for the Open Ocean Restoration Area. The representatives include Chris Doley and myself, Lori Rounds, for NOAA, Homer Wilkes, Ron Howard, and Mark Deffley for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Gail Bonanno and Trita Grayson for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and Deborah McLean and Ashley Mills for the Department of the Interior. The Open Ocean trustees work together to restore wide-ranging and migratory species injured by the spill. We coordinate with the state trustees, especially when proposed restoration projects overlap their jurisdictions. The term open ocean can sometimes be confusing. However, restoration will focus on the most effective restoration for these migratory species throughout their geographic range, which in some cases may take place outside of the Gulf of Mexico. This chart shows the restoration allocation for the open ocean restoration area. The open ocean allocation is approximately $1.2 billion, with a little over $868 million to restore living coastal and marine resources injured by the oil spill. Draft Restoration Plan 2 focuses on the four restoration types highlighted on the slide. These include fish and water column invertebrates, allocated $400 million for restoration, including $20 million for the Oceanic Fish Restoration Project approved under early restoration. $55 million is allocated to restore sea turtles, $55 million is allocated to restore marine mammals, and $273 million approximately is allocated to restore mesophotic and deep benthic communities. In addition to these four restoration types, the Open Ocean TIG is also responsible for restoring birds, allocated $70 million, and Gulf sturgeon, allocated $15 million. The Open Ocean Trustees restoration planning process began with the project identification step in the top left of this graphic. In 2017, we released a call for project ideas for all six open ocean restoration types and completed project screening of ideas received to identify projects that would best meet our restoration goals and priorities. Then in February 2018, the trustees announced that we would develop two open ocean restoration plans. The first restoration plan was developed for birds and sturgeon and was finalized in March 2019. And then on May 15th, we released our second restoration plan, which we are presenting to you today to seek your review and input. After considering and incorporating public input on this draft restoration plan, we will finalize it and begin implementation, monitoring, and reporting. In developing the draft restoration plan, we used a robust screening process to determine a reasonable range of alternatives to restore fish, sea turtles, marine mammals, and mesophotic and deep benthic communities. I'd like to note here that in this presentation and in the draft restoration plan, the terms project and alternative are used interchangeably. In the draft plan, we evaluated 23 restoration alternatives using factors from the Oil Pollution Act to identify projects that would best contribute to restoring the injured resources. Alternatives were also evaluated under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, to consider any potential environmental effects that may result from the proposed restoration actions. Based on our evaluation, the trustees proposed 18 preferred alternatives across the plan's four restoration types for an estimated total cost of approximately $225.6 million. The public comment period began on May 15th with the release of the draft restoration plan, and comments will be accepted through July 1st. The next two slides provide a brief summary of the Open Ocean Trustees screening process, which is described in Chapter 2 of the restoration plan. The screening process included restoration type experts for the Open Ocean Trustee agencies, and in total, we reviewed over 1,600 project ideas submitted to the Deepwater Horizon project portal. Initially, project ideas were removed if they were duplicative, already required by law, had already been funded, or if they had insufficient information for evaluation. The remaining project ideas were then reviewed to identify ideas that were consistent with our high-level programmatic goals and our goals for each restoration type. We also considered whether project ideas were consistent with the trustees' strategic frameworks for restoration activities for sea turtles and marine mammals. After the first two screening stages, we then applied additional criteria to help identify project ideas that were consistent with the priorities identified in our public notice. Ideas that proposed innovative approaches or techniques to meet our programmatic goals, and ideas that fully met applicable laws and supported long-term management plans. The remaining project ideas were then screened using Oil Pollution Act screening criteria, including cost-effectiveness for the anticipated benefits, likelihood of success, and whether the project would benefit more than one resource. This project screening process helped the trustees review the many project ideas received so that a reasonable range of restoration alternatives could be developed and proposed in the draft restoration plan. This slide summarizes the number of projects considered through the screening process, resulting in the reasonable range of alternatives described in the plan. For example, following the initial screening step, our fish restoration screening team reviewed approximately 189 project ideas through the remaining screening steps. This included combining or modifying some activities from across multiple ideas to develop projects that have a high technical feasibility and that could result in the greatest restoration benefit in light of the available funding. The reasonable range of alternatives developed includes the five fish restoration alternatives described in the plan. These alternatives were then evaluated using factors from the Oil Pollution Act and the National Environmental Policy Act. And based on these evaluations, the Open Ocean Trustees are recommending four fish restoration projects as preferred for implementation at this time. A more detailed description of this process for all restoration types is provided in the draft restoration plan and environmental assessment. Next, we'll have our restoration type experts provide an overview of the preferred alternatives proposed in the draft restoration plan. Jamie Reinhart will begin with the fish and water column invertebrates restoration type.
Thank you, Lori, for that overview. I'm Jamie Reinhart with the NOAA Restoration Center. And I'll reiterate a little bit about the injury to the fish in water column and vertebrate. The injury to fish and invertebrates that live in the water column was immense. A wide variety and diversity of organisms inhabit the water column, including hundreds of fish, such as drums, snappers, and tunas, as well as invertebrates like shrimp, crabs, and squid. Many of these species spend their entire life in the water column, while others may only use the water column for part of their lives. These organisms inhabit all parts of the ocean, from the estuaries to the deep sea, and play critical ecological roles by cycling and transporting nutrients and energy between the near shore and offshore, and between the surface and the deep sea. They also form, in large part, the marine food web, with the other injured resources like birds, sea turtles, and marine mammals, and contribute substantially to vital ecosystem services. The trustees established restoration goals as part of the Programmatic Damage Assessment and Restoration Plan. These goals for fish and water column invertebrates are to restore injured species across the range of coastal and oceanic zones by reducing direct source of mortality. And secondly, to increase the health of fisheries by providing communities with methods and incentives to reduce impacts to fishery resources. I'll now provide a brief overview and summary of the four preferred alternatives in this restoration plan. The first project is reduction of post-release mortality from barotrauma in Gulf of Mexico reef fish recreational fisheries. This project has an estimated budget of about $30 million and an estimated duration of 7 years. To reduce barotrauma and restore recreationally important reef fish populations such as red snapper and groupers, this project would distribute fish descending devices to charter boats, headboats, and private boat anglers, and ensure anglers are using best release practices by providing outreach and education. This project would also conduct monitoring to determine how the use of descending devices can affect mortality rates and determine changes in use patterns among recreational anglers. Barotrauma and reef fish is known to reduce post-release survival, and by working to reduce the impact of barotrauma, we can restore populations of reef fish. This project would focus on areas of high recreational fishing efforts, such as coastal Alabama and the Florida Panhandle, and the project would later expand to additional areas of the Gulf of Mexico. The second project is the better bycatch reduction devices for Gulf of Mexico commercial shrimp trawl fishery. This project has an estimated budget of about $17 million and a duration of 7 years. This project would help restore fish injured by the spill by reducing finfish bycatch in the commercial shrimp trawl fishery. The shrimp trawl fishery targets brown, white, and pink shrimp. However, shrimp trawls can unintentionally catch other species. The unintentional catch can include juvenile red snapper, croaker, porgy pinfish, and Gulf menhaden. To reduce finfish bycatch, this project proposes to identify and implement a project to promote the use of better bycatch reduction devices throughout the northern Gulf. Birds. Bycatch reduction devices are devices that are inserted into the shrimp trawls and allow non-target species to escape while retaining shrimp. Initially, a bird innovation survey would be conducted to identify industry-based birds innovations currently in use. The project would also engage with U.S. and international entities that are actively involved in shrimp trawl bycatch reduction development to identify birds for further testing. To promote the use of these birds and help fishermen install and use them correctly, outreach such as workshops and trainings and incentives would be made available. Experts on gear modification, including fishermen, would be engaged to help develop details of the program. The third preferred project, communication networks and mapping tools to reduce bycatch phase one, has an anticipated budget of about $4.4 million and a duration of 5 years. This project would implement a feasibility study to identify areas where bycatch is high, referred to as hotspots, in a variety of fisheries and develop tools to help fishermen avoid these areas. This phase one project would focus on identifying the requirements of a system in order to create near real-time detailed maps of bycatch hotspots for fisheries selected for this project. Phase one would identify the elements required for a communication tool that would inform fishermen of the high bycatch potential in those areas so that they could be avoided. These project activities would include conducting scoping meetings, scoping workshops to identify these fisheries, regions, and ports that would benefit from this bycatch identification system. Would also develop maps to identify these areas of potentially high bycatch and high fish densities, and hold further workshops to discuss the use of a voluntary communication network to avoid bycatch. The project would identify requirements for specific bycatch communication networks to inform potential implementation of the project. The final preferred alternative for this restoration type is restoring for bluefin tuna via fishing depth optimization. This project has an approximate budget of $6 million and a 10-year duration. Data has shown that pelagic longline gear deployed at depths greater than 360 feet have the potential to reduce bluefin tuna interaction with pelagic longline gear and thus decrese bluefin tuna bycatch mortality while still allowing catch yellowfin tuna. This project would conduct a pilot study to better define an optimal pelagic longline depth to reduce bycatch of Atlantic bluefin tuna. Data would also be collected on possible effects to other species from deeper longline fishing. Fisheries observers would be used to collect this information. This study would take place over 4 years in cooperation with voluntary purchasing commercial longline vessels in the northern Gulf of Mexico. Outreach workshops would then be held along the U.S. Gulf Coast and Mexico to increase the awareness of benefits of this technique and to encourage voluntary adoption by commercial fishermen. At this time, I'd like to turn the mic over to Sarah Wisman, who will give us an overview of the preferred alternatives for sea turtles.
Thank you, Jamie. Hi, everyone. My name is Sarah Wisman. I work for NOAA in our National Sea Turtle Program. And I will provide an overview of our sea turtle preferred alternatives for you. But first, some background. There are five species of sea turtles found in the Gulf of Mexico: loggerhead, Kemp's Ridley, green, hawksbill, and leatherback sea turtles. All five are listed as threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act, and all are federally managed by both DOI and NOAA. All sea turtles are highly migratory and have a wide geographic range. In the Gulf of Mexico, sea turtles are also a shared resource, crossing state, federal, and international boundaries. The trustees found that all species of sea turtles were injured by the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. Injuries were quantified for loggerhead, Kemp's Ridley, green, and hawksbill sea turtles. Leatherbacks were also injured, but injury could not be quantified to a specific number of turtles. The trustees have also established four goals for sea turtles. The goals are, number one, to implement an integrated portfolio of restoration approaches to address all injured life stages and species. The second goal is to restore injuries by addressing primary threats to sea turtles, such as bycatch in commercial and recreational fisheries, acute environmental changes, loss or degradation of nesting beach habitat, and other human-caused threats. The third goal is to restore sea turtles in the various geographic and temporal areas within the Gulf of Mexico and Atlantic Ocean that are relevant to those injured species and life stages. And fourth, we'd like to support existing conservation efforts by ensuring consistency with existing sea turtle recovery plans and recovery efforts. So in this restoration plan, the Open Ocean TIG is proposing 6 sea turtle projects as our preferred alternatives. I'll go through each one of those now. The first project, you could advance the slide. Looks like I went back.
I'm sorry, we're having a little bit of a technical problem with getting the slides to advance. Let me just pause for a minute. Let me see if I can't get these synced up a little bit.
Okay, no problem. While you're working on that, I'll start talking about the first project, and then we'll see that slide in a moment. The first project is called the Gulf of Mexico Sea Turtle Atlas, and this project is expected to last 15 years with an estimated budget of $5.7 million. This project would develop a central platform to access and view sea turtle data that are currently dispersed across various agencies, academia, and other organizations. The project would provide a public web-based interface that is available to stakeholders and restoration planners and managers, all to help inform restoration planning and help prioritize needs and activities. Okay, there you are. That's the first one, the Gulf of Mexico Atlas. The second project that you see on the screen now is called Identifying Methods to Reduce Sea Turtle Bycatch in the Reef Fish Bottom Longline Fishery. And this project is anticipated to last 2 years with an estimated budget of $290,000. Sea turtle bycatch in the Gulf of Mexico Reef Fish Bottom Longline Fishery has been documented by NOAA's Observer Program since 2005. Bycatch in this fishery occurs when sea turtles either take baited hooks or become entangled in the line, causing serious injuries and mortality. This project would work to identify factors contributing to sea turtle bycatch in this fishery. Existing observer data would be thoroughly analyzed and compared to other data sets to identify environmental factors or fishing practices that may be associated with the sea turtle bycatch. This project would inform future restoration efforts. Next slide. And the third project is called Developing a Gulf-Wide Comprehensive Plan for In-Water Sea Turtle Data Collection. And this project has an estimated duration of 2 years and a budget of $655,000. This project would develop a comprehensive plan for coordinated data collection on sea turtles in the marine environment across the Gulf of Mexico. Assessing the status of sea turtle populations across broad areas and multiple life stages is difficult. And as a result of that, data gaps exist for sea turtle distribution, abundance, and vital rates. So this project would focus on the development of a systematic approach for data collection in the marine environment. It would involve convening experts to develop standardized data collection strategy, identifying data collection protocols, and coordinating with various stakeholders. And the fourth project is developing methods to detect sea turtle bycatch in the Gulf of Mexico menhaden purse seine fishery. And this one has an estimated duration of 4 years and an estimated budget of $3 million. Fisheries observers help to characterize bycatch by observing when, where, and how many protected species become entrapped in fishing gear. Newly developed tools such as video monitoring are also employed to document bycatch. The Gulf of Mexico menhaden purse seine fishery currently lacks an effective observer program to assess sea turtle bycatch. So this project would work with the menhaden industry to identify the most viable means for sea turtle bycatch detection to fill important data gaps. And this project may inform future restoration as well. All right, so our fifth project is titled Reducing juvenile sea turtle bycatch through development of reduced bar spacing in TEDS. Estimated duration is 4 years and estimated budget is $2.15 million. Sea turtle mortality in the shrimp otter trawl fishery has been greatly reduced with use of turtle excluder devices, generally referred to as TEDS. A TED is a metal grid that fits into the caught end of a trawl net with a top or bottom escape opening covered by a flap. When turtles encounter a TED, they should be able to escape through the adjacent opening while the shrimp pass through the bars and are caught in the net. While current TEDS are successful at excluding larger turtles, they are not able to effectively exclude small juvenile sea turtles because those turtles can either pass through the bars or are unable to escape through the flap opening. This project would test new TED designs for otter trawl with smaller bar spacing to determine if that can effectively exclude the smaller turtles. New designs would also be evaluated for shrimp catch retention on commercial vessels. And the last project that we'll talk about for sea turtles today is called Long-Term Nesting Beach Habitat Protection for Sea Turtles. The duration is 3 years and budget is $7 million. Sea turtles face a variety of threats on their nesting beaches. Nesting females and hatchlings are negatively affected by artificial lighting, coastal armoring, and nesting habitat alteration. This project would protect valuable high-density sea turtle nesting habitat through acquisition of nesting habitat near the Archie Carr National Wildlife Refuge on the Atlantic coast of Florida. Through acquisition of land from willing sellers, the project would protect essential nesting habitat into perpetuity. It would reduce future threats from development, and it would enhance sea turtle hatchling productivity. And next, I'm going to turn it over to Laura Engleby, who will provide an overview of the marine mammal preferred alternative.
Thanks, Sarah. Hi, everyone. This is Laura Engleby. I'm the chief of the marine mammal branch for NOAA Fisheries Southeast Region, and I'm going to be talking about the preferred alternatives for marine mammals. Just a little bit of background. There are 21 species of cetaceans, and that's the whales and dolphins, found across a broad range of habitats in the northern Gulf of Mexico, including offshore coastal waters and the bays, sounds, and estuaries. All marine mammals are federally protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and some, such as the Gulf of Mexico Brutus whale and sperm whales, are also protected under the Endangered Species Act. The trustees determined that as a result of the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, exposure to chemical contaminants had resulted in death, reproductive failure, and adverse health effects such as lung and adrenal disease in northern Gulf of Mexico cetacean populations. Marine mammals are long-lived species, so it may take decades to recover without active restoration. Also, it's important to note that the Open Ocean TIG has placed an initial restoration focus on continental shelf and oceanic stocks of marine mammals. So the trustees' restoration goals for marine mammals are to implement an integrated portfolio of restoration approaches to restore injured marine mammal species across their diverse habitats and geographic ranges. Also to identify and implement restoration activities that mitigate key stressors in order to support resilient populations. And then to collect and use monitoring information such as population and health assessments and distribution information. The trustees will also identify and implement actions that support ecological needs of the stocks, improve resilience to natural stressors, and address direct threats caused by human activity, such as bycatch and fisheries, commercial fisheries, vessel collision, noise, industrial activities, illegal feeding and harassment, and hook and line fishery interactions. So after careful consideration, the trustees propose four preferred alternatives for marine mammals that are in this draft restoration plan. These include, first, reducing impacts to cetaceans during disasters by improving response activities. One of the more direct opportunities to benefit cetaceans is through improving and enhancing response and assessment activities during anthropogenic or human-caused and natural disasters in the Gulf of Mexico when large numbers of animals are threatened. Specific activities proposed by this project would include conducting a Gulf-wide gap analysis and risk assessment of the current disaster response capacity. Activities would also include improving planning and developing protocols for marine mammal disaster response and investigation, and developing new tools and techniques to minimize or reduce cetacean injury and mortality. Overall, restoration goals would be met by the eventual implementation of marine mammal disaster response and preparedness measures that would improve the survival and health outcomes of cetacean populations in the Gulf of Mexico. The estimated duration for this project is 10 years, and estimated budget is about a little over $4.2 million. The second preferred alternative is to reduce impacts of anthropogenic noise on cetaceans. The acoustic environment in the Gulf of Mexico includes a spectrum of noise sources, including a variety of human-made sounds from, for example, seismic air guns, explosives, pile driving, and vessel noise. Cetaceans rely on sound for vital life functions, and anthropogenic noise levels may mask important biological sounds or disturb or displace vital behaviors and cause direct physiological harm. Many strategies and technologies for reducing noise impacts to cetaceans have been developed. However, further development and effective implementation are still needed. So this project would leverage existing recommendations and studies to identify activities to reduce noise levels in the Gulf of Mexico, convene experts to learn more about the status of new technologies, and identify mechanisms for applying new and existing techniques in the Gulf of Mexico, and then work with groups to identify partnership opportunities to advance noise-reducing technologies for testing and implementation. This would also include a noise risk assessment that would be conducted to identify the highest risk areas in the northern Gulf of Mexico where restoration actions could most effectively prevent or reduce the negative effects of anthropogenic noise on cetaceans. And then the project would also use passive acoustic monitoring arrays to continue baseline data collection, which would inform restoration and monitor noise reduction outcomes. The estimated duration of this project is around 6 years with an estimated budget of $8.9 million. The third preferred alternative is compilation of environmental threats and animal data for cetacean population health analysis, or the acronym Cetacean Platform. Currently, information on cetaceans in the Gulf of Mexico is collected by a variety of organizations and is stored using different databases. To coordinate critical data for restoration, this project proposes to develop a platform that would provide user-friendly, web-based access to data sets that would assist the trustees, restoration planners, responders, and conservation managers in the restoration and protection of marine mammals. It would also develop protocols to better integrate data collected across multiple partners. Technical experts would identify key data sets, parameters, analyses, and partners for the project. The Cetacean Platform would be released over the first 3 years of the project and include training to inform users and data collectors of standardized data collection protocols. And a cetacean platform would support restoration planning, prioritization, and implementation by making key data available to decision makers in a centralized platform. This project has an estimated duration of 5 years and an estimated budget of $5.8 million. The fourth and final preferred alternative I'll be talking about is reduce and mitigate vessel strike mortality of cetaceans. Vessel collisions are one of the main anthropogenic sources of mortality for large whales around the world and are a threat to cetaceans in the Gulf of Mexico, particularly to large whales such as the Gulf of Mexico Brutus whales. While there are a number of potential actions to reduce the risk of whale-vessel interactions, there is insufficient information to implement one set of measures across the Gulf of Mexico and to know what measures would be the most effective. So in order to appropriately focus vessel strike risk reduction activities, this proposed project would first conduct analyses to evaluate vessel activity in the Gulf, consolidate data for characterizing offshore cetacean distribution, and then combine vessel and cetacean data to identify areas of relative concern for collision risk. Once the project establishes and prioritizes high-risk areas, the project would identify and develop partnerships, cultivate buy-in from other stakeholders, and implement the most effective and efficient activities to reduce and mitigate vessel strike mortality for each high-risk area. This project has an estimated duration of 6 years and estimated budget of $3.8 million. So next you're going to hear from Chris Benson, who will talk about preferred alternatives for the mesophotic and deep benthic communities.
Okay, thanks very much, Laura. This is Christopher Benson, and I serve as NOAA's coordinator for restoration of mesophotic and deep benthic communities affected by the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And so next slide. It's important for context to the restoration, the preferred alternatives that I'll describe, to understand the scope and scale of the injury that was assessed to mesophotic and deep benthic communities. There was a quantified injury described in the programmatic damage assessment and restoration plan to over 2,000 square kilometers of a footprint of injured benthic habitat surrounding the Deepwater Horizon wellhead, and there was an additional substantial loss to resident corals and fish in an approximately 10 square kilometer area of mesophotic reef habitat, primarily in the Pinnacles region, and those are the areas that are outlined in red on this slide. In addition to those quantified injuries, there was documented hydrocarbon exposure to an additional 7,500 to 12,000 square kilometers of benthic habitats that extended up the continental slope from that area around the wellhead and onto the continental shelf. There was also a deep plume of hydrocarbons in the water column that extended some 250 miles southwest of the wellhead, and that deep plume was trapped in the water column at a depth that intersected bottom depths between 975 and 1,280 meters, and that's all in addition to the cumulative surface oiling extent of over 43,000 square miles that Laurie described earlier. And those two, the surface oil extent and the deep plume, could have contributed significantly to the marine snow event that was observed throughout the area. Next slide, please. So in response to that injury, the final restoration type that we will discuss is for mesophotic and deep benthic communities. These include hard and soft ground habitats, as well as associated fish and invertebrates, rare corals, fish, crabs, and other small animals and microbes live in these habitats on the seafloor, and they're part of the foundation of life and of food webs in the northern Gulf of Mexico. In addition, mesophotic reef habitats are important for a variety of fish species that are of commercial and recreational importance, such as snappers, groupers, and amberjack. The Deepwater Horizon oil spill severely affected mesophotic and deep benthic communities, and the species that make up these communities can be very long-lived and slow-growing, some living for hundreds or even thousands of years. As a result, their recovery is also expected to be slow. Restoration is complicated by several factors, including a limited understanding of key biological functions of the species that live in these habitats, limited experience with restoration at these depths or with these species, and remote locations that limit accessibility. Therefore, the trustees' restoration goals for this restoration type are to restore invertebrate and fish abundance and biomass for injured species, focusing on high-density mesophotic and deep-water coral sites and other priority hard-ground areas to provide a continuum of healthy habitats from the coast to the offshore, to actively manage valuable deep-sea communities to protect against multiple threats and provide a framework for monitoring, education, and outreach, and to improve our understanding of these communities to better inform management and ensure resiliency. So the four preferred alternatives that make up the preferred alternatives described in the plan come to a total of $125 million cost estimate there. They comprise a portfolio that would be implemented over a 7 to 8 year period. There is an initial 1 to 2 year implementation planning period that would allow for strategic planning, development of detailed adaptive management and public engagement plans, and coordinated management of cross-cutting project requirements. Implementation planning would be followed by a 5-year implementation period and a final year of project evaluation and reporting. And again, the total estimated budget for this portfolio of preferred alternatives is about $125.5 million. The first of the preferred alternatives is called Mapping, Ground Truthing, and Predictive Habitat Modeling. And this project would document abundance and distribution of deep benthic communities and provide fundamental information to prioritize and support protection and management activities and to target locations for direct restoration. This project, as with all of them, is estimated to last 7 to 8 years and comes with an estimated budget of about $35.9 million. The Habitat Assessment and Evaluation Project would fill critical gaps, data gaps, and evaluate sites for potential direct restoration and protection activities at both injured and reference sites. It would document ongoing injuries to mesophotic and deep benthic communities from natural and anthropogenic threats. It would provide background data needed to detect and quantify future impacts in other locations and to assess the success of our restoration efforts with respect to recovery, natural mortality, and growth rates, and would establish a baseline for health and condition to guide direct restoration and protection. This project, again, got a duration of 7 to 8 years and an estimated budget in this case of $52.6 million. The third preferred project is called Coral Propagation Technique Development. This would be a pilot scale project to develop methods and techniques for effective enhancement of coral recruitment and growth and for the identification of methods that could be successfully applied at large scale for restoration. And this would directly compensate for the loss of mesophotic and deep benthic corals and associated benthic and water column communities that were injured by the oil spill. This project has a budget of about $16.9 million. And the Active Management and Protection Project would manage and protect mesophotic and deep benthic communities from known threats, contributing to management activities to achieve restoration goals that were identified in the Deepwater Horizon Programmatic Damage Assessment and Restoration Plan to maintain ecological integrity and to increase ecosystem resilience through outreach, education, and engagement, and through direct threat reduction efforts, such as mooring buoy installations and removal of marine debris, derelict fishing gear, and invasive species. This project would also provide information to management entities such as the Gulf of Mexico Fishery Management Council, NOAA's Office of National Marine Sanctuaries, and DOI's Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. This project comes with a budget of approximately $20.6 million. And there's a good deal of additional information on specific activities that are included in each of these projects in the plan. There's simply not time to get into that level of detail in this presentation, but I encourage you to review the plan and raise any questions that you may have about those specific activities. And so with that, I will turn it back over to Lori to take us to the next step in our webinar.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, and thank you to all of our presenters. We would now like to give everybody the opportunity to ask any questions about the draft restoration plan, the proposed projects, or the comment process or next steps. As we described at the beginning of the webinar, this is an opportunity to ask questions, and the trustees will answer as many questions as we can over the next 10 minutes. We hope that this question answer period will assist with the development of comments on the draft restoration plan. Please continue to hold any formal comments that you would like to submit until we begin the public comment session of the webinar next. So Stephen Heverly with NOAA will now provide a reminder about how to enter your questions and the process we will use during this question and answer period.
Thanks, Lori. So we provided an opportunity to for folks to submit questions along the way. With any questions that are submitted or will be submitted during this time, we're gonna paraphrase some of them or generally combine similar themes to try to answer as many as we can. Remember, if you have a question to submit at this point, you can type it into the questions box, which is there on the slide in front of you. And it's at the bottom of the GoToWebinar control panel. So we're just going to take a couple of minutes to give you time to enter any additional questions before we begin. Just please be as concise as possible when you're answering your questions. Then we'll pass your questions along to someone on our team that can best respond, and they'll provide an answer if they can. Your questions, again, as Lori mentioned, your questions and our answers will hopefully help you with crafting your public comments later in the webinar, or if you happen to submit them in the future through our online portal or the mail. We might not get to all the questions, but we'll try to get as many as possible during the next 10 to 15 minutes here. So it looks like we've got some that are being posted right now. So thanks a lot for those. We'll just give another quick minute here to allow you folks to enter those. Okay, so for our first couple of questions, we're going to turn it back to Lori, Lori Rounds with NOAA's Restoration Center for those. The first is folks are wondering if any of these opportunities will appear as a request for proposals or an RFP under NOAA ProTech Fisheries or Oceans, and those are probably some contracting ways, mechanisms for folks to participate in. So, Lori, can you answer that?
Yeah, thank you, Stephen. And it's a great comment. As I mentioned, we have our comment period on the draft restoration plan and the proposed projects through July 1st. Following that comment period, the trustees will consider all of the input that we received and incorporate that comment and finalize the restoration plan. That will include selecting the projects that as final. And then, as I mentioned, we'll move into the implementation stage. It's during that stage that the trustees identify the most effective mechanisms that we can use to implement projects. And many times that can range, and it'll depend on the specific project. So it could include various mechanisms, including included in the question, various mechanisms that the lead implementing trustee may have in place, such as contracting mechanisms. But it really is going to be based on each project and the most effective mechanism to achieve the goals of that particular project. So there will be a multiple ways in which we implement these projects as effectively as possible. So thank you very much for your question.
Thanks, Lori. Okay, we got another one for you. The question here is, how will projects be directly funded where stakeholders can monitor project activities over the duration of the projects?
Well, another great question. Thank you very much. As I mentioned, when we move into implementation of the projects, all of these projects that are going to be finally selected in the restoration plan will be available on our Deepwater Horizon project website. and we will provide information about all of the project activities being implemented, including annual reports on the progress that we're making for each of those projects. So that is an easy way in which stakeholders can go and get more information about the projects that ultimately do get selected and move towards implementation. For all of these projects also, wanted to point out that each of these do have a monitoring and adaptive management plan associated with them, and those are included in the appendices for the draft restoration plan. So all of those monitoring and adaptive management plans provide information about the type of data that the trustees will use to help monitor our progress and if need be, to be able to make corrective actions to make sure that we achieve the goals for each of those projects. So those are a couple ways that you can take a look at the monitoring and adaptive management plans that are being proposed right now. And then once the final projects are selected and begin implementation, you can access that information from our Gulf Spill Restoration website. So thank you very much for your question.
Thanks, Lori, and that's a great reminder. We the trustees throughout the Deepwater Horizon Restoration Program just released the annual reports for all of the ongoing activities and projects, and as Lori mentioned, those are available on the gulfspillrestoration.noaa.gov website. The next question here is for Laura Ingleby, related to marine mammals. And the question here is, in regards to the project named Reducing Impacts to Cetaceans During Disasters by Improving Response Activities, it sounds like the current project focuses on identifying gaps, probably information gaps. Will the funds outlined in this plan also be used for implementation, or would future funds be used for future plans? Laura?
Sure, thanks. That's exactly right. The project does focus on, the proposed project focuses on identifying gaps. Some of the funds will be used for implementing certain outcomes from those gap analyses, but this project is also meant to leverage with existing activities and training networks that are supported along the Gulf and along the states and through other means. And then also certainly continued implementation could be considered in future plans as well. Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Laura.
And just okay. To let you guys know, we're about halfway through the question and answer session.
Thank you. Okay. We will go back to Lori. This is another marine mammal question, but it's more related to the injury. The question is, how will marine mammals that were injured in nearshore waters be addressed through what restoration planning process? Lori?
Great. Thank you very much. Yes, and as we described earlier, the injury to marine mammals was quite extensive by the oil spill, and the allocation to marine mammals was distributed across the trustee implementation groups based on the type of injury that occurred to marine mammals, and was developed to really have those trustee implementation groups focus on the injury that is most applicable or most most applicable to their restoration area. And so the allocation for marine mammals was distributed across the other trustee implementation groups, such as other state restoration areas, as well as the region-wide trustee implementation group, and obviously, as we were talking about today, the Open Ocean Trustee Implementation Group. So collectively, the trustees do look at the injury across the Gulf. They look at the injury and the allocation across the trustee implementation groups and look to address the injury in the most appropriate way through our trustee implementation groups. So for the question of near shore waters, those may be addressed through a very similar planning process to what we're going through today, through another trustee implementation group in which the trustee implementation group would identify interest in collecting project ideas for how to restore marine mammals in the nearshore environment, would review those project ideas, and develop a draft restoration plan for public comment. So very similar process across the trustee implementation groups, and again, collectively looking at the injury to marine mammals and the most appropriate place to be able to restore for that injury. So thank you very much for your question.
Thanks, Lori. We have one more right now, unless folks take a minute to enter any additional questions, and that's another question related to marine mammals. So we'll ask Laura Engleby to help us out with this one. But the question is, bycatch of marine mammals is a direct threat, and how will marine mammal bycatch be addressed? Laura?
Yeah, thanks. This is a really important question. As it says in the PDARP and our strategic framework, certainly bycatch and commercial fisheries is a significant threat, particularly to bay, sound, estuarine, and coastal cetaceans. This restoration plan is focused on the trustees made the decision to focus on continental shelf and oceanic species of marine mammals. And those species typically interact primarily with the pelagic longline fishery, and with a significant amount of observer coverage in the Gulf of Mexico portion of that fishery, there's been very limited bycatch in that particular fishery. And so for those species, that fishery isn't as significant as a threat as some other of the coastal fisheries, such as shrimp, menhaden, gillnet, and crab pots and things like that. So basically, the idea is that since this is focused on oceanic and continental shelf species, that we are focusing on the other threats that are related to them. And then in terms of addressing the important issue of bycatch reduction, the thought is to look towards working collectively and collaboratively through the region-wide process and working with states to address those coastal and nearshore fisheries that have a direct impact on those coastal and nearshore species. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. And we're going to pause just for a moment here to take in some additional questions.
We have about a couple more minutes if anyone has any more questions.
And just as a reminder to everyone, we're going to have the public comment period coming up here in just a few minutes. But again, if you have any questions that might be helpful during the public comment period, feel free to enter them. Okay, great. Well, I think that's all we have time for questions. And we definitely appreciate everyone's input here. And I'm going to pass it over to Lori Rounds to kick off the public comment session of the webinar. Lori?
Great. Thank you, Stephen, and thank you, everybody, for those great questions. We really appreciate everyone's interest in these restoration projects and open ocean restoration. So now we're going to move into the public comment session of the webinar, and this is the time where we'd like to accept any comments that you have on the Open Ocean Draft Restoration Plan 2 and Environmental Assessment. Comments submitted during this portion of the webinar will be included as part of the formal public comments for the draft restoration plan. We will accept comments over the next 10 minutes or so before closing the webinar at our scheduled time. Because of time limitations and constraints of the webinar commenting tool, please keep your comments brief. If you have lengthier comments, please consider using the other modes to provide your comments via the online portal or by mail. Methods for submitting the comments are provided on our website, gulfspillrestoration.com, and we'll also have a reminder slide for how other ways that you can submit your comments. Because this is part of the public comment period, the trustees will not respond to comments at this time. Instead, a summary of the comments received, the trustees' responses, and any changes made to the draft plan will be included in our final restoration plan. So as a reminder, the trustees listed here are participating today for NOAA, the Department of the Interior, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So next, Stephen will go over how to enter your comments using the webinar tool.
Thanks, Lori. Similar to the question and answer period of the webinar, we're going to ask folks to type in your comments on the draft, the Open Ocean Draft Restoration Plan number 2 into the questions box. And similar to that, we're also going to give you a few minutes to enter any comments before we begin to read them so that participants can hear your comments. So what we're going to do is just give you a couple minutes to enter your comments. We're going to take a minute to compile those, and then we'll read them aloud if possible. So we might not be able to repeat all of them provided, but we'll try to get to as many as possible. Comments submitted during this portion of the webinar will be included as part of the formal public comments on the Open Ocean Draft Restoration Plan 2. So once again, we're just going to take a quick pause here to allow folks to plug in their comments, and then we'll read them out once we get some in the queue. Again, this is an opportunity to provide some concise comments on the draft restoration plan, anything that you've seen the presentation here. So if you have anything, go ahead and drop it into the questions box there. Again, we'll hold just a couple more minutes and see if anybody has any comments they want to submit.
Environment for Florida's future. Thank you for calling the Florida Department of Environment.
All right, well, I think that's about it. We had one comment just thanking us for hosting the presentation. The comment verbatim is, thank you, this has been very helpful. So we appreciate that, thanks a lot. I'm gonna pass it back to Lori, and she's gonna go over next steps related to the restoration plan and public comment period. Lori?
Great, thank you, Stephen. And make sure that everyone, we get a chance to remind everybody about how to submit your comments on the plan. So comments can be submitted via our online comment portal by U.S. mail at the address provided on this slide and in the materials on our gulfspillrestoration.noaa.gov website. So as we mentioned, public comments will be accepted on or before July 1st, 2019. And then after the close of the public comment period on July 1st, the Open Ocean trustees will consider all the input received during the public comment period, and then we will incorporate that and finalize the restoration plan and environmental assessment. We'll provide a summary of the comments received and the Open Ocean Trustees' responses in the final restoration plan and environmental assessment. Thank you for joining today. We also had our public meeting last week in Pensacola on June 4th and appreciated the comments received then. We will also have a second webinar on June 13th if you would like to join us again, June 13th at 6 p.m. Central Time, and registration is required to participate again. That information is available on our website. And we just want to thank you again for your time and your interest in Deepwater Horizon Gulf Restoration, and we look forward to receiving your comments on the draft restoration plan. We will post the presentation from today's webinar to our trustee website, and we will now conclude this webinar. Thank you very much.